for this evening is a very nice topic. If Donna Kelly Mataji was here, she would call the heading The Art of Fault Finding. Go to the internet, click on, you know, GBC, and have a blast. Or, you know, some other something or other. A few scriptural references, I think, for a start would be nice. One that I like very much, there's a number of them, but one that I like very much is from Chaitanya Charitamrita, where in one purport, Srila Prabhupada uses the phrase Adosha Darshi. And those of you that are Sanskrit fans, you know what dosha means. Who knows what dosha means? It's a special kind of prasadam, right? You know what dosha is? Calamities? Close. Dosha means fault. Fault. And a-dosha is without fault. And a-dosha darshi is one who sees no fault. So that's a very nice quality. A-dosha darshi. I'll read the purport where Prabhupada speaks of this, but does the context of the purport is the author of Chaitanya Charitamrita was named Krishnadas Kaviraj. He was given the title Kaviraj because he was Kavi, very learned. In fact, amongst learned persons, he was Kaviraj. He was the king of learned persons. Very scholarly and very, very expert at writing. And he was a younger generation than even Raghunath Das Goswami. And Raghunath Das Goswami was youngest, along with Jiva Goswami. He and Jiva Goswami were young amongst the six Goswamis. Was very young. But Jiva Goswami, there were three brothers. Sanatan Goswami was the eldest, Rupa Goswami was the middle, and Anupam was the third brother. Anupam's son was Jiva Goswami. Anupam died when he was just a very small boy. So Jiva Goswami never met Lord Chaitanya. Well, if he did, just unclear in the biography, maybe when he was a baby. So when Lord Chaitanya came to the place where Rupa and Sanatan and Anupam were living. Don't put your back, Aditi. Thank you. In any case, Jiva Goswami was very young. And Raghunath Das was very young, and even younger than both of them was Krishna Das, chronologically. When Raghunath Das was very young, he left his fabulously wealthy family as the only son, thus the heir of fabulous wealth. He left it all with no interest whatsoever, but with profound interest in Lord Chaitanya, Lord Chaitanya's association, and Lord Chaitanya's teachings. So skipping many wonderful details, when he reached Puri, Lord Chaitanya placed him in the care of one of his intimate associates. Who knows which associate, Raghunath Das, was placed in the care of Surup Damodar. Surab Damodar. Because there were a number of Raghunaths, you know, Raghunath this and Raghunath that, he became known as the Raghu of Swarup. And Surab Damodar, was Vishakha in Krishna's Leela. Surab Damodar had intimate understanding of Lord Chaitanya. Intimate understanding of Lord Chaitanya. And whenever Lord Chaitanya's pastimes were performed, not only Raghunath Das was there and he saw them, but the inner mood, the ecstasies of Lord Chaitanya were disclosed to Raghunath by Surab Damodar for the whole duration of time that Lord Chaitanya remained in Puri while Raghunath was there. So that was something like 20 years. Something like 20 years. He had intimate association with Lord Chaitanya, and he had intimate disclosure from Surab Damodar as to the meaning of Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, the intimate ecstasies of Lord Chaitanya, internal mood. He had full understanding of that. So he was very, very attached to Lord Chaitanya. When Lord Chaitanya finished his pastimes, Raghunath Das wanted to leave with him, didn't want to continue living. But he had great attachment for Rupa and Sanatana Goswami, and he had great attachment for Govardhan, because Lord Chaitanya had personally worshipped a Govardhan Shila for a couple of years, or 2 or 3 years, and then Lord Chaitanya gave as a gift that Govardhan Shila to Raghunath Das. Raghunath Das understood the inner meaning of that to be Lord Chaitanya was giving him residence at Govardhan. So when Lord Chaitanya's pastimes concluded, Raghunath wanted to go to Vrindavan, because he had never been to Vrindavan. He wanted to see and be with Govardhan, pay his respects to Rupa and Sanatana, and give up his life, jumping off Govardhan Hill, with an intense mood of separation from Lord Chaitanya. And Rupa and Sanatana, they could understand, transcendentally, they could understand what was going on in his heart. So without even disclosure, they said, you can't do this. You can't do this because we've been here in Vrindavan in separation from Lord Chaitanya. Well, you've been with Lord Chaitanya for 20 years. And you've experienced directly all of his pastimes. So we instruct you. You are a junior, we're your senior, we instruct you. You stay here in Vrindavan, and 3 to 4 hours every day, you simply recite the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya that you experienced in Puri, and the meaning of which you understood from Surab Damodar. So he couldn't disobey. He had some service to do. So he maintained his life and resided primarily at Radhakund, which later he excavated, because Radhakund that we see today isn't Radhakund when Raghunath Das first got there. It was the Radhakund that Lord Chaitanya had discovered, Radhakund and Shyamakund. That's a whole other chapter of Raghunath Das's service. But every day, under a tree, near his bhajan kutir, he would recite Lord Chaitanya's pastimes. Could you imagine what that was like? Just close your eyes and imagine. Just 2 generations after Lord Chaitanya, hearing directly from one who had been with Lord Chaitanya, Raghunath Das Goswami, the Prayojana Guru, at Radhakund every day, 3 to 4 hours. What was that like? And in the assembly was Krishna Das. Kaviraj. And he heard every day, every day, every day, every day, and that meant he assimilated it, everything. And Raghunath wasn't the scholar or and writer that Krishna Das was. So the residents of Vrindavan, they appealed to Krishna Das. We're experiencing this nectar, but what will happen to the next generations? They won't know this nectar. So can you please, on behalf of all the Vaishnavas today and in the future, write this biography of Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, as you've heard it from Raghunath Das? So, those of you that were with us in Gita Nagari, you know what one of the principal qualities of an exalted Vaishnava is, and that's humility. So Krishna Das was an exalted Vaishnava, so he had great humility. He didn't feel qualified. But they insisted and insisted and insisted. So in order to accept this service, he felt, as a Vaishnava would feel, he would need the blessings to write a biography of Lord Chaitanya. So he went to the various senior-most Vaishnavas in Vrindavan at the time and sought their blessings. And it describes by name who Krishna, because he went and asked different people, so he gave the names of different people. And one of them that he went to was Ananta Acharya, who was a disciple of Gadadhar Pandit. Did you know that Gadadhar Pandit had disciples? Gadadhar Pandit had disciples. We don't read so much about Gadadhar Pandit had disciples and who they are, but there's a reference. And he was, in addition to being a disciple of Gadadhar Pandit, he was a pujari at the Govindaji temple, the temple of Rupa Goswami. And he had a disciple whose name was Haridas Pandit. And when describing Ananta Acharya, you can feel the ecstasy of Krishna Das as he describes that the glories of Ananta Acharya are countless. One could go on reciting the glories of Ananta Acharya and not find the end of them, and therefore his name is suitable, Ananta Acharya. And then he describes Haridas Pandit. So I'm going to read a little bit about Haridas Pandit. Ananta Acharya was a disciple of Gadadhar Pandit. His body was always absorbed in love of Godhead. He was magnanimous and advanced in all respects. Ananta Acharya was a reservoir of all good qualities. Nobody can estimate how great he was. Pandit Haridas was his beloved disciple. Pandit Haridas had great faith in Lord Chaitanya and Nityananda. Therefore, he took great satisfaction in knowing about their pastimes and qualities. He always accepted the good qualities of Vaishnavas and never found fault in them. He engaged his heart and soul only to satisfy the Vaishnavas. It says later that he, just as Raghunath Das was reciting what he heard from Srup Damodar, the next verse is, Pandit Haridas always heard the reading of Sri Chaitanya Mangala, and all the other Vaishnavas used to hear it by his grace. Like the full moon, he illuminated the entire assembly of Vaishnavas by speaking Sri Chaitanya Mangala, and by the nectar of his qualities, he increased their transcendental bliss. Chaitanya Mangala is the name by which Chaitanya Bhagwat is known today. In other words, Vrindavan Das Thakur, the son of Narayani Devi, who is the niece of Srivas Pandit, Vrindavan Das Thakur wrote the biography of Lord Chaitanya first, and he called it Chaitanya Mangala. Later it was changed by others to Chaitanya Bhagwat, accepting that Vrindavan Das was the Vyasadeva of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes. Vyasadeva, writing Krishna's pastimes, wrote Bhagwat Purana, so the book should be called Chaitanya Bhagwat. So he was, every day, Haridas Pandit was reciting for hours Chaitanya Bhagwat with great realization, with great ecstasy, with great happiness, enlivening and enlightening all the Vaishnavas. So he was being approached by Krishna Das. And this quality, I'll read it again, he always accepted the good qualities of Vaishnavas and never found fault in them. Purport. It is a qualification of a Vaishnava. We're trying to be Vaishnavas. That he is adosha darshi, : he never sees others' faults, period. Then, of course, every human being has both good qualities and faults. Therefore, it is said, saj jana gunam ichchanti dosham ichchanti pamara. Or, translation, everyone has a combination of faults and glories. But a Vaishnava, a sober man, accepts only a man's glories and not his faults. For flies seek sores, whereas honeybees seek honey. Haridas Pandit never found fault with a Vaishnava, but considered only his good qualities. Elsewhere it's described that this quality of adosha darshi is such that in the presence of such a personality, persons wouldn't even dare speak the faults of a Vaishnava in front of such a person, because it would just be not tolerated. So they didn't bother coming and doing the blah, blah, blah program. It's just, you know, it's not what you do in front of Pandit Haridas or such a personality. And interesting, just to repeat, Prabhupada says there's this saying in Sanskrit which says everyone has both qualities and faults. So it's not that a Vaishnava is blind and closes their eyes and can't see. They can see. But then they overlook. Adosha darshi is they don't see, is they see, but they don't, they're not fly-like, where, you know, a fly, there's a sore, and flies go to the sore. And there's some honey, and flies don't go to the honey, they go to the sore. So fly-like persons are fault-finding persons, and Vaishnava persons are honey-like persons, and they go to the honey. They see the good qualities, they appreciate the good qualities, they speak about the good qualities, they encourage the good qualities, and as the good qualities become stronger, then the lesser qualities become diminished. Just like as the light becomes brighter, the darkness is dispelled. So that's one reference about fault finding. Those of you that are scholars of Bhakti Shastri, we have at least one of them here, a Bhakti Shastri teacher. You'll find in Nectar of Instruction one of the qualities of the three levels of devotees. The advanced devotee is one who has the same quality, same feature. It's not part of their program to seek or find fault in others, even though there may be fault. It's just not part of their program. And another very nice reference, very simple. Morning walk conversation with Srila Prabhupada in Mayapur in 1976, where Tamal Krishna Maharaj was always good at, you know, bringing kind of challenging and important questions to Prabhupada's attention so, you know, clarification could be reached for the leaders at the time and for us today. So Tamal Krishna Maharaj asked, morning walk conversation, February 76. What is the way to draw the line between the following three things? Blasphemy, fault finding, and calling a spade a spade. You know what that means? Calling a spade a spade? You know, telling it like it is. You know, like a New Yorker. I tell it like it is, man. Blah. Calling a spade a spade. So, Prabhupada answers that one first. A spade a spade. Just like I am saying, quote, what are you? You are a small fig only. That is reality. What is the other? That was Prabhupada's answer. So, it's, you know, from a spiritual perspective, we're tiny. So to say, you're tiny. It's not like, you know, you're a young girl and you've got a small body, and so you've got a small body. No, but your body's going to grow and your body's going to grow. But it's not even like that. From a spiritual perspective, I've been studying Sri Brahma Samhita, and there's this nice verse, 54, of Sri Brahma Samhita, that's describing how the Supreme Lord is equal to everyone, and he gives the karma that's deserving to everyone from an Indra to an Indra Gopa germ. And the Indra Gopa germ is insignificant. And Indra, even in relation to Lord Brahma, he's insignificant. But it's not, that's not fault finding, it's just he's insignificant. There's the guna avatars, Lord Vishnu, Lord Brahma, and Lord Shiva. Lord Brahma, his lifetime is for the whole duration of the universe. And Lord Brahma's lifetime consists of 100 years. And each year is 365 days times 100 makes his lifetime. And each day of Brahma, there's 1,000 yuga cycles. In each one of the yuga cycles, there's 14 manus. And during the reign of each manu, there's a different set of demigods, Indra being the head of them. And Indra is the next one down the line from Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. So I forget the math, but it's, you know, what's the math? What's the day of Brahma? 1,000 yuga cycles? 4.32 billion.
And that's how long the night is.
That's long the day and the long of the night. So divide 14 into that, and that's how long Indra lives. And then the life. So compared to Brahma, it's not fault finding. It's just telling it like it is. He's insignificant. And then what to speak of the Indra Gopa germ, who's perhaps, you know, on the 8,400,000 species of life, maybe the lowest or way down there. So we could say the Indra Gopa germ is insignificant. But it's not fault finding, it's just insignificant. There's a nice Prabhupada story. It's along this line of calling a spade a spade. One devotee, it's a famous story, one devotee came to from some distance to see Prabhupada, and he was in feeling this mood of humility, and he came, he got an appointment to see Prabhupada, and he was expressing profound humility. Prabhupada, I'm the lowest of the low, and I'm the most fallen. And this devotee was carrying on in a way that was clear that he really didn't have an understanding of what it meant, what he was saying. And Prabhupada heard him out, and then when he was done, Prabhupada said, "You are not the most anything. You are simply insignificant." That's calling a spade. And certainly from the position of spiritual master to disciple, such a message is not fault-finding, and it's not blasphemy. It's part of the duty of a spiritual master to instruct like that. That's so Prabhupada is saying to Tamal Krishna Maharaj, "What are you? You are a small fig only." That's calling a spade a spade. We're truly insignificant in the big spectrum of time and reality and the cosmic manifestation. Our false ego makes us think we're important, but we're really factually not so important. In one of his writings, Srila Prabhupada calls the conditioned souls in this age of Kali as forgotten souls. That's calling a spade, quite insignificant. So what's the next one? Tamal Krishna Maharaj. The other is fault-finding and Prabhupada cuts him off, so he's now going to give his definition of fault-finding. Fault-finding, that is another fault. That, and then he quotes this very same Sanskrit phrase that I read from Chaitanya Charitamrita, which is, "Varam ichchanti, makshika varam ichchanti, madhum ichchanti." And he gives its meaning, just like he did in this purport. Just like the flies, they are finding out where is sore. And the bees, they are finding out where there is honey. So, two animals, or two insects, they have got two businesses, fault-finding and collecting the good things. These are two. Just like creature, they are two classes. Similarly, there are many rascals who are simply fault-finding. You know, so the two classes, like the swan and the crow. The swan goes to the nice lake and with lotus flowers, and the crow goes to the garbage heap, although they're birds. So two birds, two insects, two different natures. One, so in humans, fault-finding nature and bee-like, honey-appreciating nature. Tamal Krishna. And blasphemy? Prabhupada. Blasphemy means you have good qualities, but still I am defaming you. Tamal Krishna. So the saintly person tends to overlook the bad qualities and see the good ones. Srila Prabhupada, yes. That's the Adosha Darshi message. So from Chaitanya Charitamrita and a morning walk conversation, we now have a little bit of idea of a distinction between calling a spade, like we're insignificant creatures, or fault-finding, going for where the faults are instead of seeing where the qualities are, and blasphemy, even though there's good qualities, criticizing. And the Sanskrit for that one, in the 10 offenses against the chanting of the holy name, is sadhu ninda. Ninda means blasphemy. Prabhupada has translated as blasphemy or criticism. Criticism of sadhu. What's sadhu? Sadhu is one who
who is attached to Sat. And now back to this. Even there may be, for all living beings, there's both quality and faults. And a sadhu is one who has some faults, but is primarily attached to Sat. What does Krishna say in Bhagavad Gita? 9:30 Bhagavad Gita. Apichet sudharajaro. The criterion is Vajate mam ananyabhag. They're engaged in an undivided manner in devotional service to Krishna. That's a sadhu. Sadhu eva samantavya. Someone who criticizes one who is so engaged, that's offense. So we're to avoid or guard against blaspheming devotees who have dedicated their lives to propagating the holy name of the Lord. It goes on, and we're not to indulge in it, wherever it's going on or why ever it's going on. And a little bit more about this quality of fault finding. So there's three: spade to spade, fault finding, and blasphemy. So it, from that spectrum, blasphemy is further down, far more debilitating and dangerous. So fault finding. What about fault finding? It's in the middle somewhere. These compared to saying, you know, you're a fake spiritual master saying to a disciple, what kind of big man are you? Now, just as in a little appreciation, in Nectar Devotion, one of my god brothers, I won't mention his name, but he really liked repeating this phrase. He repeated over and over and over again. The cowherd boys, particularly Sri Dham, would say to Krishna, what kind of big man are you? You're not so powerful. You always lose in wrestling match. So Sri Dham can say like that in rasa, as much as Mother Jasoda can bind Krishna with rope. But it's rasa. It's not, you know, someone saying, Krishna, what kind of big man is Krishna? It's not, that's blasphemy. It's offensive. But when Sri Dham does like that, it's nectar. Krishna likes it. Yes, you're very powerful, Sri Dham. I have to carry you on my shoulders because you win all the time. Krishna likes that. So here's a third reference, and this is Bhakti Siddhanta on a little essay called The Fault Lies Within. This is a nice message for fault finders. The fault lies within. The best of all persons thinks himself to be less than all others. That's the humility. Why should a person be anxious to pry into the defects of others when he does not seek to scrutinize his own conduct? The acts and the expressions of the Vaishnavas cannot be understood even by the wise. Let us not be misled by the apparent sight. Many a person has mistaken a pebble for a pearl, a snake for a rope, evil for good, by falling a victim to delusion, by relying on apparent sight. When faults in others misguide and delude you, you should have patience, be introspective, and find the faults in yourself. Know that others cannot harm you unless you harm yourself. There's a similar quote from Krishna's instructions to Uddhava, again on the topic of fault finding, where Krishna says to Uddhava, anyone who fails. Anyone who fails to immediately leave the place where he hears criticism of the Supreme Lord or his faithful devotee will lose his piety and fall down to hell. And Sridhar Swami makes some commentary where he says, quote, I'm quoting Sridhar Swami's commentary, whether it is true or not, narrating the faults of a sadhu constitutes blasphemy. So let's go back and do this again. According to Krishna's teaching in Bhagavad Gita 9:30, a sadhu is one who is engaged in undivided devotional service. That's, you know, we're being a lawyer here. So this is evidence number one. Evidence number two, there's two places where Prabhupada quotes a Sanskrit statement where everyone has both qualities and faults. Put those two. A sadhu may also have faults. But the quality, primary quality is vajate mama nanyapak. Now, Sridhar Swami is saying someone who, whether true or not, narrating the faults of a sadhu constitutes blasphemy. That's not fault-finding, that's blasphemy. So that's like the lower of the three. That's like, really don't do that. Now, the fault-finding is back here with Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. What to do when you see a fault in a Vaishnav, whether you want to consider that Vaishnava a sadhu or a Vaishnava or whatever you want to consider them, maybe, you know, a beginning devotee, one who's becoming a Vaishnava. How do you process that? He's giving advice. Be patient. Don't be self-deluded and self-misguided. Be introspective. And find the faults in yourself. I'll just share a little something about my early days of Krishna consciousness. The fan is pointed that way. It's drawn, okay. When I was in college, I received the Back to Godhead magazine from Bhurijan Prabhu, who was going to the same college that I was. He was 1 year before me in college as my first Krishna literature. And I didn't know what it was. Just, I didn't know Bhurijan so well. But, you know, so I was carrying it along with my clipboard and all my other books. And then some people saw me carrying it around and said, are you into that? I said, what's that? So, you know, the Hare Krishna thing. I said, what's that? I don't know what the Hare Krishna thing is. Well, you know, that's what that magazine is. That's the Hare Krishna thing. So because they spoke negatively about it, I was curious, what is this thing anyways? I mean, Bhurijan's a nice guy. Why would he give me something that's bad? So I started reading it. And one of the articles in that magazine, Back to Godhead, it was just like, you know, pages mimeographed and stapled together with a staple gun. Really simple. And one of the articles was an article by Bhaktisiddhanta. And the title of the article was The Bhagavat, Its Ontology and Morphology. Well, I knew what the is. And I knew what its is, but I didn't know any of the other words. So I got a dictionary out and started looking up Bhagavat and ontology and morphology and then started reading the article. And 3 hours later, like some of you that were in Gita Nagari, you heard Ravindra Swarup Prabhu speaking about reading one page. He was a PhD scholar, professor.
reading one page and took him 1 hour with a dictionary. And then he realized, oh, I've already learned these things from Prabhupada. But anyway, so I read the whole article 3 hours later. And, you know, so many words under, every fourth or fifth word I had to look up and things underlined, and, you know, like I did in for some academic work. And I didn't realize the time had just flown by. And I found my consciousness was way up there somewhere. And it wasn't because it was technical and, you know, dictionary required and things like that. It was transcendental. It was association with a transcendental personality. So from that experience, it helped me become a devotee and take greater interest in Krishna consciousness, this magazine that somebody said, you're into that. But it also, I had a very special place in my heart for Bhaktisiddhanta. From like the first thing that I read. So time passed, and I moved into the ashram in Boston, the Hare Krishna temple in Boston, because it was a very nice temple. It's without details. And about 2 weeks into my living in the temple, Guru Das came to visit the temple, and because he had been in India with Prabhupada, and he came with a whole stack of books. And I liked books. I asked him, can I look at the books? And he said, sure. And right on top was a book by Bhaktisiddhanta. And I was, ooh, a book by Bhaktisiddhanta. The second, you know, second writing of his. So I opened up the book. It was a little paperback book, you know, and really crummy offset printing. And just read the foreword. And the foreword went, I read it like 100 times, so I can recite it pretty close to what it said. Just like, you know, it filled up just this much of the page. And it was in kind of like two paragraphs. And it said, a Vaishnava is one who never finds fault in others, for by so doing he is only finding fault within himself. Whoa. I'll say it again. A Vaishnava is one who never finds fault in others, for by so doing, he is only finding fault in himself. Like something that Rukmini said in Gita Nagari, when you point a finger at someone, the other ones are pointing at you. And then he went on and saying that, in fact, a Vaishnava finds that his own heart is honeycombed, like that word, with the very same fault that he is finding in others. For if one was truly an elevated soul, they would be this Adoshi Darshi person. They would not focus on the fault. They would not find the fault, though they would see. They would find the quality. So instead of, this is Bhaktisiddhanta's instruction here. If this happens to you, maybe, you know, once every 20 years or something, something happens and you see there's some fault in someone, what are you supposed to do? When faults in others misguide and delude you, you should have patience, be introspective, and find the faults in yourself. So, be faultless. If you're going to, supposing it's in the category of not something imagined or distorted, but factual. Just imagine that might be the case. Sometimes it's the case. Now, what is finding the fault in another going to do? Nothing. What is speaking to others about that fault going to do? Make the situation worse. It doesn't help the person. It doesn't help you. It doesn't help the person that you're talking to about the fault. Assuming that you got it like 100%. You got an A on your, you know, ability to find the fault. It doesn't help any of the persons involved. It doesn't do any good. It does negative. It does harm. At least for you and the person who hears it.
the first thing is be patient. Next thing is be introspective. Where does that fault exist in me? If I'm going to be of any service at all in this circumstance, that quality or that condition that's a fault needs to be freed from my heart. If my heart becomes somehow, by grace of Krishna and Guru, becomes cleansed, then, with my palms folded in a mood of service, then I may be able to be of help to this situation and this person. But not until. So the first business is make my own heart pure. That's the first business. That's the assignment that devotees wishing to become cleansed through sadhana bhakti are to learn the art of. And if we don't, or to the degree that we don't learn that art, and to the degree that we fall into that trap of being, you know, discriminating individuals, now we know what is to be done and what is to be done, not to be done, and what is right and what is wrong, and we make it our business to see how people are doing something wrong, we're displeasing Krishna. And our own sense of pride and false ego is becoming inflated. So our vision of Krishna is being obscured. And our ability to be of service to another Vaishnava or the Vaishnavas and Krishna is being diminished by our participating in that little exercise. So we should be vigilant about that. And just the last little thing. From Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhyalila chapter 9, there's a quote, "Persons who do not blaspheme the Vaishnavas attain Lord Krishna. They attain pure love and devotion for the Supreme Lord's lotus feet. The only thing obtained by blaspheming Vaishnavas is sin. Thus, one should never blaspheme the Vaishnavas. Krishna easily delivers those who chant, even once, his name without blaspheming anyone." So we have this special dispensation, the Yuga Dharma, the congregational chanting of the holy name, which is it's available to anyone. Anyone is eligible. Almost anyone is eligible. People that are unable to speak, they're not eligible, but they can hear. And even if they're deaf, it acts spiritually. They can't make the sound, but they can hear the sound, and it's benedictory to all souls, not even just the human body. If you have a human body, you can make that sound. Of course, there's higher stages than just making a sound. There's Krishna consciousness that can awaken if one chants properly. But the Yuga Dharma is nullified, or is made not accessible to us, or in Bhaktivinoda Thakur's language, Nama Prabhu is absent. Although the sound may be there, Nama Prabhu is absent. He leaves. If one engages in this first offense of sadhu ninda, making criticism of sadhu or Vaishnavas, Vaishnava ninda, sadhu ninda. But it's something very much to be guarded against. And, you know, the problem is we do it. I mean, the problem is this is the age of Kali, and the age of Kali is symptomized by quarrel. So over, as Prabhupada writes in the Bhagavatam, over nothing. People will quarrel. Over nothing. People will criticize one another. It's just a symptom of the age of Kali, and we're chanting Hare Krishna in the age of Kali. So the tendency is, we have to have a brake pedal. We have to check that tendency. instead. Like, let's just say, when we go on Harinam, you regularly encouraged to go on Harinam here in DC. Yay, Harinam. So when you go on Harinam, you'll see people doing things that devotees won't do. But our business in going on Harinam is not to go out and, oh, look at all those things they're doing that we would never do. That's not our program. Our program is giving the holy name. Okay, so that's easy. We don't criticize those who are not devotees. Then we come back to the temple. Now here's a devotee who may be doing some residual thing that's a carryover from what they were doing before they saw the devotees on Harinam or read that first Back to Godhead magazine or whatever. We have that some expectations, and then we start to see that there's a discrepancy between the standard of a Vaishnava and what this person is doing. And so, at least in the mind, and then usually doesn't stop in the mind, it goes out the mouth, where we criticize. Oh, look at that. And then the offenses begin. So we should not do that. We should guard against that. And not just be, there's a dictionary word, I'm sure it comes from some literature, Pollyanna. You've heard that word? Not in India, you don't hear that word. Pollyanna means you only see good. It's a literature figure where he only sees good, something like that. So anyway, it's not, the advocacy is not, don't see anything and pretend that you don't see anything. Just pretend that you only see good. The elevated soul can see what's what, but they're honey-like, they're bee-like rather than fly-like. They know the art of extracting the good and amplifying the good, and of course when there's a suitable relationship only, then extending kindness and correcting the person that needs some correction, but only when there is that relationship, and then one can offer that kindness, and the kindness may come, even sharply, like, Prabhupada to Tamal Krishnamaraj. How great are you? You're no more important than a fig. Because of the relationship. Prabhupada didn't start walking around saying, you're no more important than a fig. That's not how we encourage people. But when there is such a relationship, one can say such a thing, and then it's not harsh, it's a dose of reality. This is a topic that can go on and on. I'll just say this one thing. There was a question when Brahmachari asked in some temple. He said, on the one hand, we understand that we require the association of Vaishnavas in order to advance in Krishna consciousness. On the other hand, if we make offenses to the Vaishnavas, we're finished. So is there some point, where do you draw the line where maybe I shouldn't have the association of devotees? Because I have a tendency to make offenses to the devotees. So I better stay away from the devotees until I can qualify myself enough to be in their association and not make offenses. That was a college question. That's what I call a college question. We guard against offenses. And we chant the holy name, striving, this is called the clearing stage, striving to avoid. Although we may carry the tendency to do all 10. We chant the holy name, striving to reduce those 10, including, offending devotees. Consciously striving. So this is just one of the 10. But, at the top of the list, and an important one, something that we may, we may have the tendency to do, or we may find ourselves in the company of others that have a tendency to do, or we may not even notice that we have the tendency to do, although we may have more of a tendency to do it than other people. But it's something we need to, like, little light has to go on, recognizing this is to be avoided in order to get the mercy of the Holy Name. Cultivate eliminating that tendency. Discrimination, the quality of goodness is the faculty of discrimination, that's intelligence, is operating and is guided by Scripture. So we need to know the difference between what's to be done and what's not to be done, and we see what's not to be done and what is to be done. We know to follow that which is to be done and not to follow that which is not to be done. We need that intelligence operating. When bhakti becomes stronger and humility also becomes more well established, that faculty of discrimination has the mood of devotion, wishing to expand the good and thereby diminish that which is not so good. Not only with the non-devotee group, but amongst the association of devotees. So there's some thoughts on this topic. Now, some of you received a handout. If you didn't, you'll get one. It's a far more elaborate Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur-esque detailed description of these two opposite things. You know, the finding of good and the tendency to find fault, and, you know, in gradations, as one becomes spiritually elevated and as one becomes more spiritually degraded, and the different, you know, categories in between. It's brilliant. And the essence of the message is, don't find fault. And try to enhance whatever devotional quality that you see, amplify that as the nature of an elevated soul. And they themselves are feeling within themselves not qualified, no good qualification within oneself, and all good qualifications within others, and it's not artificial, it's genuine how they feel, genuinely how they feel. So you can read that at your leisure and internalize it as much as you can. Any comments or questions on this nice topic? Yes.
Sharing about their relationship with their superiors, the struggle in their relationship, so, you know, trying to help them to build up their, strengthen their, how they put them.
I'm listening.
Yes. Sorry. So, is that also because I'm hearing from them, something that they're struggling in their relationship, is that also hearing about other person's fault finding?
It depends on the mood of the person who's speaking. Whether the nature of what they're saying is fault finding, or the nature of what they're speaking is simply describing, you know, their emotion or their experience. And a big part of such a thing is to what degree one takes ownership of their feelings. So let's take it away from that situation and say, I'm having a conversation with you. And I want to share with you, when you said or did such and such, this is what I felt. And it could be, I felt ecstatic. Or it could be I felt sad.
or it could be that I felt disturbed, or it could be I felt concerned, or whatever it is. It's not a judgment on what you did. It's just, I take ownership for my feelings, and these are my feelings. And you could go, wow, or vice versa. Then it's not like, you know, you're responsible for my feelings. I'm responsible for my feelings. And I'm letting you know, when this happened, these were my feelings. So similarly, if the person who's sharing with you is taking ownership for their feelings and describing the struggle with their feelings, rather than, you know, saying, they caused me to feel like this because of that and that and that and that and that. And if that's the modality, then that's something more in the direction of fault-finding than, I wish, you know, you're my friend and I'm seeking clarity. Please help me. I'd like some clarity how to best address the feelings that I'm feeling. Not like how we can fix that other person. Because obviously there's something broken about the other person, otherwise he wouldn't be feeling like these feelings. So, you know, where the other person is coming from may be, you know, so there's something that you can do. There are three somethings that you can do. You can leave the place. You can address the, you know, the if it's fault finding, you can address before, you know, whether that's right or wrong or, you know, mixed. Let's just talk about how you process what's out there, whether it's, you know, your superior or the man in the moon. How do you address your feelings? To, you know, take ownership. So you help them with being responsible. And then, you know, another thing you can do is, have you considered taking what you just shared with me to the person that you're sharing about? Oh, I can't do that. Why I can't do? Well, I'd be misunderstood. Or whatever it is. So you can help support them to, you know, I'll hold your hand. You'll go together and we'll sit. And, you know, as long as it's not like finger pointing, it's just sharing, this is what I'm feeling. So it much depends on the circumstance and the relationship and variables. Something else? You have something?
Remember in school, like I see, like all my like classmates and friends, like they're so deep in, like, you know, illusion, and they're so confused.
Deep in illusion.
Sometimes I think, like, if I didn't have the mercy of a devotee, I would be doing the same things.
Yeah.
And sometimes I feel, like, so grateful that I got that opportunity to not be there. Sometimes I'm like,
ooh,
I feel, like, bad for them, but I'm glad that I'm safe from that. Like, I feel, like, a little proud that, like...
Yeah. Sometimes a little judgmental. Yeah. So...
How do I...
Stay away from the judgmental program? Well, the mood of service is very powerful. The mood of service is the antidote. You may not be able to do anything, but if the mood is, I wish, Krishna, please give me the intelligence, please give me the strength to say something, do something, or be there for at least one person who, you know, doesn't like it either. But they're caught up in it because that's the only option that they know. In the mood of service. Not in the mood of condescending, but in the mood of service. Because, you know, with that humility, I would be just like that. So somehow, Krishna, use me as your instrument. It's just the mood of prayer will protect you from judgmentalism, condescending regard, oh, I'm better than they are, and stuff like that. just, I'm tiny. Yeah, that's, you know, spade is a spade. I'm very tiny. I'm also susceptible to the illusory energy. Krishna, please protect me. And let me be an instrument. Again, it's like this nice example of going on Sankirtan. When we're going on Sankirtan, the mood is giving. And because we're in the mood of giving, we're protected. They do all kinds of things. Now, when you're in school, you're not on Sankirtan. You're not like, Haribo, Haribo, you know, take this magazine and come to our temple. You're not doing that. You're one of them. You're moving around amongst them. So you can carry that Sankirtan mood in your heart. I'm Krishna, I'm your secret agent. Somewhere, there's another student like me that is really doesn't like the whole program. And maybe even they're kind of like nodding their head, yeah, but inside it's no, and I don't like the program. And so Krishna, send me to that person. Give me the right words to say when you like that. If you're in that mood, you're protected. Service mood. Humble, service mood. That's easy to say. It's another thing to do because, you know, the energy is very strong. The energy is, you know, enjoy. So the protection, in any case, is humble service mood. And cultivate it. And one of the most fun, ecstatic things is when that special person somehow just appears. You go, wow, at least there's one person I can talk to. And you really look forward to the opportunity to spend time with that person and, you know, not give them too much because they might get freaked out. But, you know, slowly, you know, so you'll feel Krishna's kindness. But Krishna's kindness is there anyway if we're in the humble mode of service, because you can get carried away and think, oh, now I'm going to fix them. And, you know, then it's you lose that mercy. Just the humble mood of service is the protection. Krishna will give everything, that the opportunity, the intelligence, the strength, challenges too, because you'll find out, whoa, look at the situation that they're dealing with, and oh my goodness, and then you're praying, and you know it's the connection with Krishna is there. And then you're protected. You have something?
Yes, it's a little bit similar to what you said. Let's say I'm very prone to judgment.
Prone to judgment?
Yes. So, what would be like the practical advice, for example, catch yourself thinking, oh, this is this, this is that. What should one do?
Immediately pause. Or you should have patience. So I say pause. To me, that means mode of goodness, please. Mode of goodness is reflective. What's going on here? You're looking, and then you look inside yourself. What's going on? Not like what's going on out there. What's going on inside here? Here I go again. You know, it's passion turning into ignorance. That's what's happening. It's not you. It's the modes of nature are being triggered, passion going into ignorance. If you remind me, I'll probably remember myself. I can send you a little passage from third canto, chapter 11, Srimad Bhagavatam, that describes what I'm saying. But it's passion combined with some ignorance. And it becomes more ignorance. Right? Yeah, become like from the judgmentalism comes, you become angry at the person because they're like that. You don't like people that are like that. So judgmentalism goes into like you're not necessarily gonna spank them or punish them, but they deserve it. They gotta fix themselves. So instead, that when the pause is there, it's look within yourself and let me fix myself. Turn that same energy inward. Let me fix myself. Let me fix that person. That person needs to be fixed. And you know, where you can start fixing yourself is two things. The tendency to be judgmental and the particular thing that you're being judgmental about. It's because it's there in you.
That's why I can see
it. Yes. Because the opposite. If you were free from that, you would see it, but you wouldn't judge it. When you become transcendental, you don't become blind. You know, it's not like intelligence goes into the off position. Intelligence is in the on position. But you're not in a judgmental mood, you're in a service mood. Passion is control. That person needs to be controlled. I'm frustrated because they're not.
Well,
no, that's another thing you can do. But before you even do that, pause, be patient, be introspective. I'm reading. Be patient, be introspective, and find the faults, plural, in you. So it minimally is two. The tendency to fault find or to judge, and that particular fault is there in you. Let, you know, physician, heal thyself. You've heard that phrase. That's the, you know, and chant. Take shelter of the holy name. Take shelter of the supreme pure, so then you have some purity and spiritual strength too, to keep going in that direction, that you, the pause and the introspecting and the finding that very same fault honeycombed within one's own heart, and then work on that. So then the strength to stay with that program instead of going, you know, like a bungee cord right back to the other one. Okay, I did my introspection. Now that person needs to be fixed.
So when I notice that I still see something, you know, faults in people, but I don't judge and it doesn't bother me, that means it's already better?
Yes, well, okay. It's like her question. As you said, it follows her question or similar to her question. In the mood of service, what can you do about it? It's outside of your capacity to do anything unless Krishna gives you some capacity to do something. Just today on the phone, I had a conference call with Rabindra Swarup Prabhu. He won't mind that I'm sharing this. You heard him speaking in Gita Nagari? There, he's carrying with him a power, a potency, from having done that research on Prabhupada and write the Founder Acharya booklet that I shared with him today. It's not just you, Rabindra. There's a power that you're carrying and you're radiating and distributing. That's a gift that's given to you by Prabhupada, and, you know, use it because it's really uplifting. We like this thing of all the little messages that he gave, that just taken from Prabhupada's life, and he's just reflecting it back out. So, it, you know, be an instrument of that message of compassion and humble service. Not just find something good. I mean, find something good, but mood of humble service. What can I do? How can I be humble? And how can I be in the mood of service to be of assistance to this situation? Otherwise, I'm part of the problem. not part of the solution. Because I'm getting, you know, involved in, you know, the darkness. And reacting to it and feeling feelings about it. I'm getting drawn into that vortex of negative energy. Instead of being part of the solution. So, humility in service. In as an instrument of Krishna, or Lord Chaitanya, or our disciplic succession, or the, you know, whatever, our founder Acharya. Who am I? I'm this insignificant little speck. That's who I am. So what can I do? But beyond your ability is that spiritual potency that can do something. That's where you can go. Cultivate that. Even when you're still seeing the fault. And the mind wants to go there. The fly-like spirit wants to go there and like meditate on the fault. Don't go there. Instead, take that energy and go inward. Where is that fault within me? And how can it be of service to this person? Or maybe it's beyond me to do anything with this person, but, you know, life. And, you know, other people that are close to me, how can it be like that? Turn it into positive energy. A service mood energy. Humble service mood energy. And just practice it. And practice it and cultivate it. And it becomes second nature.
What's the phrase with the pig? Like it's the phrase with the small pig or something you mentioned earlier in the talk? Prabhupada said.
Prabhupada said, calling a spade, just like I am saying that, who are you? You are a small fig only.
That's what, you know.
That's calling a spade a spade. But that's like spiritual master to disciple saying,
right.
Who are you, big man?
If that happens to me again, I can just think about it.
Yeah.
It kind of like brings me back to my senses.
Yeah.
Like, think of how. Okay.
Yeah, you're just it's this little speck.
Who am I to judge, right?
Yes. And my really my business is not judging. My business is purifying my own, you know, this place, this storage honeycombed with fault place, my own heart. That's my business. The small fig business. Over here, not over there. Anything else? Yeah.
I heard a quotation from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, spoken by Madhavananda, who scored the little Maharishis. He says, quoting Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, as soon as someone thinks that there's something in the world that is in need of reform, it's a sign that that person is in need of reform.
Being reformer, heal thyself.
Yeah. And as soon as one gives up the desire to reform others, then one suddenly becomes able to reform oneself by the mercy of Krishna. That's such a relief to hear that. Well, I don't have to try to reform anybody else.
You have something?
I was reading here. The Mahatma sees whatever qualities others have and magnifies them, not seeing even the smallest faults. So my question is, should we strive to not see faults?
We strive to become Krishna conscious. And that state will come when we will not see faults. When you get closer to being Krishna conscious, then yeah. At this stage, we're enjoined, madhyamas are enjoined to see Krishna and then the devotees and then the innocent and then the demons. And then amongst the devotees, those are more advanced, those are peers, those are less advanced. and then behave in proper ways, respect in appropriate manner all of the above. So we're enjoined to discriminate at our present stage. But as one becomes further advanced and further advanced and further advanced, then, yeah. What do you think? Is this a nice subject? Are you two friends? Are you the same age? How old are you? She's older than you. What's your age? 9. How old are you? 8. But you're friends, right? Do you ever see faults in one another? Do you share prasadam with one another? Sometimes? When we take prasadam later on, you can share prasadam with one another. That's part of friendship. Okay. Okay, I think we're done. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada Ki.